Matthew, so good to be with you. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, you know, as
hey.
Best as anybody can be doing in these times, whatever you want to call these times. But then I already lived through the Cold War and fucking the global war on terror. So COVID is just another disruption. And it's like, oh, it's been 20 years. It's time.
It's time. It is time. And it's time for our chat, dude. We've invited you, Matthew. In the spirit of building leftist unity, strength, and power. And in that spirit, thanks for being willing to join us, share your life and your story. We got some fun questions maybe along the way. And at any point I ask something you don't like, you just pass, just skip. It's fine. How about we start right off the bat, Matthew, with you introducing yourself, your name, your pronouns, and maybe where people can find you on the internet.
Okay, well, I am Matthew Elliott, aka Matt Bastard, 3 T's on Matt. Get the T's right, that will, you know, fix everything. And my pronouns are they, them. I'm not going to go into further detail with that because that invites discourse, and I try and avoid discourse at all cost unless I'm getting paid for it, or in specific instances like this. And you can find me these days mostly on twitter.com/Matt. 3 T's, M-A-T-T-T, I think I lost the T's. Anyway, Matt Bastard. It will be up there at some point, I'm sure. I'll
right
do it again.
There.
Oh, hey, there I am. And you can find me there. I mean, if you Google me, you'll probably find like old shit from the blog days. Please forgive me. I went through a liberal socdem phase. It was, you know, it was Obama. What can I say? We made some bad coalitions. Some people went Ron Paul. Some people went Obama. And yeah. Awesome. And holy shit, you're scrolling through my shit. There, that's my page. Yep, that. Oh no, that's cool. You can. It's not private.
Okay.
Like you can show that to everybody. I have content up there, and that's what my content looks like in dark mode. I use light mode because I like to stand out. You know, blind people. That you know, it's like, I guess it comes from performing on stage and shit. And yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So again, you know, we're getting to know you. One of the points of the show, Matthew, is hopefully, you know, get to know a lot of different people, see how lots of different people are leftists in their life, how that manifests, and you know, how that evolves, et cetera. And the other thing we're doing is hopefully planting seeds, you know. You know, we're not going to save the world with an hour long podcast. Maybe we'll do it in three, maybe, I don't know, a couple more visits. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Something like that. That's the idea. Yeah.
We'll set up a long-term plan, get a few committees going, a subcommittee and hold some votes, maybe a quorum, reach quorum.
Exactly. So the idea is we're planting seeds. Maybe we'll visit back some other time. I'm hoping so already. I think I mentioned you were one of my favorite guests from Kenzo Shibata's Meet the Left.
Oh, that was
so
fun.
So funny. Cool. I was like laughing the whole time, having a great time.
I'm glad you enjoyed that. I just kind of went in the zone. I don't know. That was like my first hit in a few years, and I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I figured whatever, it's the internet, you know, no offense, but I say the same shit about talk radio, whatever, it's AM. Like at a certain point, you just like, fuck it. It's international. It's just the Super Bowl. Who cares?
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. That's how I got to know you a little bit. And you were probably like, oh, there's Kenzo Shibata's little producer guy. And then you were nice enough to join me today. So thanks again, buddy. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for the invite. It gives me something to do amid the lockdown that is currently ongoing in Ontario, Canada, province-wide.
So I did misremember you. For some reason, I thought you were a CDSA comrade, and I totally fucked that up. But
I don't even think we have a CD. I don't even think DSA has any, or maybe it does. I know there are DSA affiliated people in Canada, but you know, fucked if I know if there's any actual organizing happening here. I've always been more connected with anarchist communities, even though I've had some weird forays, like, you know, so as I said, the socdem phase and all that. But coming up in the 90s, a lot of the, you know, with the anti-globalist movement and anti-consumerism and all that, a lot of the focus on theoretical anyway, and also in practice, was from an anarchist perspective. So, you know, prior to the Battle of Seattle, I guess, you know, that was, you know, you had a lot of action happening because I don't know about elsewhere, but in Ontario, we had a recession right around 94, 95. And we had a far right slash and burn neoliberal type government that came in and crushed a lot of shit, but also invited a lot of dissent. So I was around 18 at this point, and that really kind of, you know, you had to pick a side basically. And because one of the first sectors they targeted was education, a lot of students got involved in activism at that age. So a lot of my friends got involved with starting tent cities and parks, and eventually that led to cooperative housing initiatives, et cetera. And a lot of them now are still very much committed to that lifestyle, and a lot of the projects that they started as teenagers in high school who were pissed off at the man are now, you know, lauded by the same community that rejected them and tried to shut them down. So shout out to Unity House in London, Ontario, Canada, and the good people behind that project. And there's a lot of history behind that. And I hung around in high school with those kids because they were also just, you know, people who were involved in the music community and creating art. And we all went to the same technical slash art school that was in the middle of downtown London, Ontario, Canada, and across the street from the city's, at the time, only methadone clinic, and in the middle of, and surrounded by a bunch of crack houses. So it was really an interesting experience in that regard, educationally.
Fascinating. This is great. I'm already noticing some seeds that we're planting. And of course, if we have time later, we can dig into whatever we want.
Food not bombs is good, kid.
Food not bombs. I keep hearing about food not bombs. Can you give us the TLDR about food not bombs?
Basically, it was just
the third time I've heard this week.
It was an organization. You know, again, it was a grassroots organization that kind of came up around, you know, alongside or at least parallel to things like ARA, Anti-Racist Action. And it was a community initiative where people would literally have community food drives in public spaces, you know, to create this concept of communal living and being in touch with your local community, you know, at a time when neoliberalism and structural adjustment was the order of the day, even on the left. You know, this is when Tony Blair was coming into power. So you had New Labour trying to change the concept of what social democracy or democratic socialism or socialism, which were all pretty much interchangeable back then. And, you know, the third way movement was coming in, really kind of diluting activism and that sense of community by putting in a more market-oriented individualist philosophy. So these kind of grassroots, you know, just something as simple as having food that is free. You know, that's one, making a statement against capitalism. You know, here is a commodity that we are reclaiming as an essential good for the people, and anybody can have it. There's no means testing. You come up, you have your food. And hey, by the way, here's some information on why money should be going to food programs instead of funding munitions for wars overseas that, you know, are just to create more capital and more opportunity for resource extraction, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't know. I've seen a lot of discourse recently about how the 90s and Generation X and what have you all were kind of politically apathetic. And in my experience as somebody who was actually there, yes, I'm aging myself here, but whatever, people were extremely connected then, because there was kind of this gap that was left where the Cold War once was, and suddenly there was opportunity to express leftism in the public sphere that before had been in the Reagan era really suppressed media-wise. So suddenly when Clinton came in 1992, he was supported in a coalition by Riot Girls and a lot of people on the far left that you wouldn't expect, because he was the youth candidate. You know, he represented, at the time, a boomer was like, holy shit, a boomer's going to be president. You know, that was back when boomers were on 30-something, because they were 30-something. And Bill Clinton was on the older end of that. But he still, you know, today it seems corny to have Fleetwood Mac playing in Hope, Arkansas at your party after you've just won the election. But back in 1992, when you could get disqualified from the Supreme Court for taking a toke off a joint in college, that was revolution. You know, that was like, holy shit. And that's, of course, what promoted the backlash coming from a culture war addled right wing. Here comes this pot smoking, sax playing, all but black man from the deep south who eats McDonald's and talks to people. Who cares what his actual politics are? Just in the politics of, you know, just image wise, just on that facade that runs presidential politics, Bill Clinton represented a diametric shift in the power. You know, it was back to the kind of he was a sort of democratic president that could actually, theoretically speaking, if he wanted to, get shit done. He comes from the South. He had, you know, communities, he has support on a broad coalition among people in the left, in the center, in the business community, as well as in black communities. Now, he pissed all that away really early on through a lot of massive missteps, but you know, in November 1992, it was like, holy shit, you know, that was really when it felt like the Cold War was over. You know, if you'd told anybody in the spring that coming off of the winning the Gulf War, that George H.W. Bush would not be reelected, you would have been laughed out of there. You know, the Democratic field was a mess. Bill Clinton was at the bottom. He had that Jennifer Flowers sex scandal. And then the economy tanked. And then, you know, some of those, that read my lips, no new taxes pledge came to bite Bush in the ass because he had to raise taxes because he's prudent. And oh, fuck, here we go. And Clinton just connected to people. He had that, what was it, the public debt moment, where they were having a town hall meeting and a woman in the audience asked, you know, what are you going to do about the public debt and or the national debt or something along those lines? And HW gave this long spiel about, you know, the deficit and, you know, economic prudence and cutting taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And Bill Clinton came out and looked her in the eye and said, I understand what it's like to not have food on the table. I understand what it's like to not, you know where your next paycheck is going to come from, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, just that the difference was palpable. Here was this old, out of touch, rich dude who didn't even understand a simple goddamn question. And Bill Clinton just nailed it. And he seduced the audience and he seduced the country. And it worked. It very clearly worked. Now, he also had the advantage of having a three-way fight. You know, so that was also taken into consideration. You know, having Ross Perot in there allowed him to come in with to come in without having a clear majority. And cool, lucky for him. That's politics. Welcome to the system. Maybe we should think about pushing third party a little bit harder, if only to disrupt things like that when it seems insurmountable. Just a thought. Just a small thought. I'm not talking the Green Party, though. That shit's done. I'm sorry if there's any green adherents out there, but that shit is an op. And I'm just going to say that straight the fuck up. That shit is an op. The American Green Party is an embarrassment. Every other Green Party in the world is like, I don't know her. Like, fuck that bitch. I'm sorry. I don't know her. Yeah. Like, and that's saying something considering how shitty the Canadian Green Party is. Hi, guys. You fucked up by not bringing in that eco-socialist slate. Anyway.
This is off the charts here. I'm loving this, Matthew. I'm fucking loving this. The I'm energy barely that you've brought today. This is exactly why I wanted you on the show. This is awesome.
Once your brain just gets going. See, there's just so, dude, like, if you ask, if somebody just, you know, tells me, come up with some fact or come up with something, I'll just be like, fuck, I don't know. But if you trigger that associational memory, then something in the files will just pop up and just be like, I remember this time, 1987, when George Michael first shook his ass. And what? Back when everyone said they thought he was straight.
Yeah.
Now that is a heterosexual man, just like Freddie Mercury. Again, for the kids who have seen the Queen movie, for real, the members of Queen tried to claim they had no clue that he was gay or what have you, and did, like, there's like, I had no idea. And meanwhile, he was chatting up Bono at Live Aid in 1985 and made him blush because, of course, Bono is like fresh off the boat kid from fucking Ireland, and you know, he's just like, oh my, Freddie Mercury wants in my pants. I think maybe, I don't know. This isn't hearsay either. This is from the Daily Mail, so you know it's true.
In the name of love. You should have one of those like artists that like does like the whiteboard shit and they just draw what you're fucking saying. This is great, dude.
Yeah, it will all center back again, probably to something completely inconsequential, but that's how I like things.
The question I asked was, hi, how are you?
Oh, okay. Cool.
No, I'm fucking with you. Okay, we were talking about food, not bombs, and everything. Okay, so I sort of have to insist we sort of pressure on here in the chat. I'm going to ask that we go to your leftward bound journey. You've touched on a lot of different things, and I'm going to assume they sort of weave their way into the story. And I feel like you were sort of leading into the story already, but feel free to continue leaning into this chat about your discussion about your pathway to leftism. Oftentimes people feel comfortable identifying their ideology. You don't have to. If you want to, you can.
I'll identify the ideology, but unfortunately it's one of those terms that have been co-opted by current discourse, hence why I hate discourse, but, you know, forget what the rad libs on Twitch and YouTube say. Libertarian socialism is not warmed over neoliberalism. Okay. It's anarchism. That's it. So I guess it's a, or at least it's a branch of anarchism. So that's the one that, you know, I would, I guess, identify as if I had to pin it down. And that's been backed up by many of those goddamn political compass tests that I've taken over the years out of boredom. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm not liberty? This test is fuck bullshit. Yep. And then eventually it's like, oh yeah, well, I guess if you have those values, A plus B equals C, I don't believe in electoralism anymore. Fuck it. Mm. But my political journey, as such as it is, began one by being black in a predominantly white environment, and two, music. And those two came together through Public Enemy. And that was really what woke me up, and not in the vernacular, but literally opened my eyes to not politics per se, because I grew up in a very political household, but to contemporary politics, certain things that challenged dominant norms. I grew up in kind of a Christian home, fundamentalist evangelical cult, you know, pick your poison, it's all applicable. And but I also knew that I didn't fit within that dynamic. And this kind of gave me, you know, Public Enemy really radicalized a lot of kids, specifically a lot of white kids back then. And, that was their genius. They targeted the suburbs, not the hood. And they told they got the broadest, going for the broadest audience they could with the message that needed to be heard. And they were seen as dangerous. It was it's hard for people to imagine today, you know, with Flava Flav being like Flavor of Love and all that shit, you know, a reality TV joke. But back then, Public Enemy was considered, you know, they had an FBI file. They were considered a menace. New York talk radio, thought that they were advocating violence. This was, you know, around the time of Do the Right Thing and Crown Heights riots and all that shit, you know, and Public Enemy was tied in with that because of their association with Spike Lee and the song Fight the Power. And of course, that is about as explicitly political as you can. That's basically a shot across the bow of Reagan era America and every myth that it had established. And here are a crew of black college educated people who present iconography and imagery of blackness that has been criminalized and ostracized by the state over the years. They boldly claim that at a time when the Cosby Show is the sanitized image of blackness that's been fed to the culture. And they come out carrying guns, wearing military fatigues, you know, shouting out the Nation of Islam. Well, not basically, shouting out the Nation of Islam. And also hearkening back to the Black Panthers, who, of course, you know, still within living memory, were considered a threat, so much of a threat to the state that they were, you know, that the state had members of the Black Panthers assassinated and disrupted groups and so on and so forth. And they kind of tried to do the same shit to Public Enemy. And Public Enemy wasn't trying to do anything other than put out good music and put on a show that would make people dance. But at the same time, it would educate you. You know, Chuck D called rap music at the time the CNN for the black community. And that's, you know, I've seen that, you know, seeing the rise of the 247 news environment and social media and stuff, you really do see how music kind of filled a void that mainstream media had left. You know, a lot of topics that wouldn't be touched by the news media, you could tune into a show like the Arsenio Hall show, for example, that was youth oriented, and he'd be talking about the LA riots with members of NWA. He'd have on Ice-T talking about library and literacy programs that he'd be taking part in. You know, he'd actually have a discussion and a debate and challenge. It wasn't just, you know, the green room, this is what we're going to talk about, what do you got to promote thing. You know, it would get spicy, and it was expected to be spicy. You know, that was part of the culture back then, especially within this kind of growing black underground that was epitomized by the Native Tongues crew and even A Different World. Surprisingly, you know, that idea of the black college, you know, based on the imagery that had been brought to public eye by Spike Lee with School Days. You know, that kind of, that's basically what A Different World was. It was, you know, Bill Cosby trying to put a sanitized version of School Days onto the screen. And then Debbie Allen took over. Nah, we're going full School Days, and we're going to do an LA Riots episode that gets our show canceled. And that, wow. And that's so a lot. So for me and a lot of people in my generation, our political consciousness is entwined with popular culture. So you'll see a lot of Gen Xers who you can't really separate your politics from popular culture because that was really the vector for your education. Now I went the extra mile and actually started reading theory and reading, you know, I'd go to the library and just grab a stack of books, and I had the, you know, I was already reading The New Republic and The Atlantic and The Nation and was it Canadian Dimension, Z-Mag, like all, you know, In These Times in good old paper, because the library would get them, you know, and if you went to the library, you could read them. And once you read them, you would find other ones like the Utney Review. That was a great, I think it still might exist in some form or fashion, but that's a periodical that was a digest. So it would take excerpts from other magazines, and it was left oriented. So that introduced me to Mother Jones and all these other outlets. So it was just like going down a rabbit hole. And once you had that opened, it's like, okay, let's go there and go there. And, you know, at a certain point, you had Adbusters coming out, and you had Naomi Klein's No Logo and the anti-consumerist movement and culture jamming and everybody hearkening back to the spirit of 1968 and situationalism. And that came to the path. And then I think I mentioned before coming up here, the recession in Ontario had a revanchist government that came in that cut services heavily, but that it also led to the closest thing that Ontario, all but a general strike. It was called the Days of Action. It took place between 1996 and 1998. And it was a coordinated labor action undertaken by both public and private unions that basically involved coordinated shutdowns in sectors that weren't allowed to do wildcat strikes. So if they did get a wildcat strike, they could be charged and things like that. So they would find a way, there was a lot of strategizing involved. And if you look at Labor Notes, there's an article about the Ontario Days of Action that goes into how people can kind of use that, or it's how some people use that as a model for what an actually existing general strike could look like. Hey, there we go on the screen. You're good at this shit. And my little Days of Action story is that I was in a band at the time, and the drummer's mom was one of the organizers for the London Day of Action, and she wanted our band to play We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister at one of their protests in front of City Hall on a flatbed truck. Now, this is in fucking December, so I can't remember specifically why it didn't happen, but I'm presuming because it was too goddamn cold, but... that's the sort of environment I grew up in. So again, going back to this idea of people not being political in the 90s, I'm like, fuck, we were just kids in a band who were like, fuck this. They're fucking with our parents and our parents' jobs and our future and our ability to prosper in the future. We're not going to take it. No, we ain't going to take it. And now that being said, there were obviously a lot of people who were apathetic, but it's really interesting to see how history is written rather than how history was lived. And I'm starting to understand the frustration of activists from the New Left and such who saw how they were misrepresented once the backlash took hold and Reagan got power and began to shape the narrative using public media, you know, good old fashioned consent manufacturing. It's not just some shit that Herman and Chomsky came up with. It's just something they outlined. They didn't create it. They just noticed it. Like, that's media criticism, kids. They teach that shit in journalism school. Like, I can confirm that, or neither confirm nor deny. But anyway,
Matthew Elliott, if that is your real name, I'm loving this, by the way. Absolutely. Absolutely loving it. My next question has to do with, I don't know, it's pretty big. If you had to distill your life into some life advice for a younger version of yourself, if you could go back in time, or that's not possible, maybe you're just distilling advice for someone in chat or watching the replay, what might you share? It could be life advice or leftist advice or a combination of both. Take it any way you like.
Okay. Well, I get a little bit of advice. Be really careful about people who are very open about being former Nazis. They're probably a cop. That's I know you'd like to say, oh, they're bad. You mean to say, oh, they're bad people. Like, no, they're probably a cop, because, you know, Nazis are very often cops, and Nazis that leave the Nazi world and want to enter leftist spaces should be, you know, oh, this is going to get me in trouble. Everybody, you know where my ad is. Hi. You know, hey, anyone with Destiny or Vosh or any of those motherfuckers. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a motherfuck, y'all. I could be y'all fucking parent. You know, I'm old and I like, not even Degrassi Junior High. I could be a thoroughly acceptable parental figure for some of these people, and that scares the living fuck out of me. I can't allow this to happen. It's not. Let's just put it this way. It's not normal to have large groups of people who say, yeah, I used to be a Nazi when I was 17, but I'm much better now that I'm 18. That's not normal. I'm not necessarily saying that these little teeny LARPers are fucking cops, but anyway. Yeah. The biggest advice is do good drugs, read a lot, listen to your parents, but don't necessarily believe what they're telling you. Say your prayers and eat your vitamins, and you'll be a good little Hulkamaniac.
Excellent advice. Do good drugs. I like that one. But read a lot. Yes. Read a lot.
Then read come up, everything. You can't be a writer unless you read. And every great writer will tell you that. And every shitty writer, will also tell you that. That's how you learn how to write. You can't teach writing. That's like, you do it. It's something you either do or don't do. And also with writing comes thinking, because you're taking thoughts and distilling them and making them something, you know, taking them from the ether and putting them, you know, on paper or on screen. And once it's out in the world, you know, it's no longer yours, you know, death of the author and all that shit, whether you subscribe. God, I'm tackling all the controversial topics. Infinite Jest, kids, it's a book. And
yes.
Yep. It's definitely a book that's been published. That's all I'll say about Infinite Jest.
It's a thing.
It was a book that was published. I think we should stop. Yeah, it's really all you need to know. Some people have read it. Some people say they've read it. Some people haven't read it. Some people say they haven't read it, but have read it and liked it. And I might fit into one of those categories. I might not. I'm just saying David Foster Wallace was not that interesting, to be honest. But anyway.
All right. Matthew, now we've come to the portion of the interview we call it the Leftist Inquisition. It's the questionnaire. Yeah. Everyone loves it. No one hates it. You can pass or skip any question. Some of them are stupid, but it's just sort of like a way to make conversation. No big deal, right?
Yeah. It's an icebreaker.
Yeah, exactly. Although I'm not even sure we've broken the ice. I feel like, yeah. Now we're just having fun here. If there's any left to have.
We got the door open there. We're out in the ice. You know, we're just kind of fishing, having a few beers, kind of trying to hook some bait. Yeah. I'm probably going to pay for this online later. Again, fuck Destiny. Fuck Vosh. Fuck that SDL guy. Just fuck them all. I don't care. I'll say the same thing about talk radio. I'll say the same thing about Substack. It's all fucking bullshit. Anybody who says they know what they're talking about is a fucking liar, including me.
Yeah, I don't know shit.
I don't know shit, kids. That's the best advice I can give you. You don't know shit, but neither do they.
Exactly. It's easy to fake it, though.
Oh, it's so easy to fake it, especially in a performative environment like online.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Matthew, first question. Do you have a favorite word?
Fuck.
Fuck, yeah. Yeah. Do you have a least favorite word?
You know, people will say moist and things like that, but I don't know. Words are words. You know, they're all good. Sometimes they annoy you. It can be how somebody says it. So no, I don't have a least favorite word.
Matthew, speaking of doing good drugs, do you have a favorite drug? Do you have a favorite vice or a guilty pleasure? If you like, you can name one of each.
Okay, well, I mean, coffee probably counts all of the above, and I put that as my favorite because it's the only one I'm addicted to and the one I cannot have because of that and other reasons. Yes, I'm caffeine free now for 4 years, and the few times that I have indulged, it's been good. I used to drink a lot of coffee by the pot. a lot of coffee. But and if you want more traditional drugs, I mean, does marijuana even count as a drug anymore? Like pot is pot. You just kind of, it's there. It's so. And then the rest of them take it or leave it. I mean, E was fun back in the day, but trying to get some good shit was like, you know, you were more likely to win on a scratch ticket than you were to find some good X. So. Why that's like with drugs, it's kind of like I see people doing it. I'm like, this shit is bad though. And I don't mean because drugs are bad. I mean, because it's not good. Like this shit is whack, man. And they keep doing it. And I'm like, okay, I'm out. Peace. I'm good. I'll go do the stuff that I like to do. I'll have my coffee and my joint and my beer and, whatever else vice. And I don't like mushrooms. That shit give me a stomach ache and fuck that. Acid was fun. I would do LSD again, not microdosing. That's just dumb.
Yeah, it's a waste.
Just it is
the whole tab.
I think acid is unfairly maligned again with that history. You know, being because it was such a culture war football, there was a lot of scare stories about it. So I came into it thinking, oh God, what's going to happen to this? And not a lot happened other than kind of feeling good. But do drugs, kids. There's some more advice for the children. Do drugs, but just make sure they're good drugs. You know, just make sure they're good. Do the drugs that you like, not the drugs that you don't like. And okay, next question.
Next question. Loving it. This is the sound or noise. Do you have one that you love? Especially.
I love the sound of feedback. I've played in loud ass bands for a number of years and done noise music projects and shit like that. And so give me some nice atonal dissonance. I will chill with that shit.
Oh, it's usually so loud though.
That's, you got to feel, that's the perfect, it's about feeling it. You know, that's why you put earplugs in, cause you're, yeah, well, neither was I. I mean, I'm saying that's my advice to kids. Actually, that's serious advice. Wear earplugs who has hearing loss because they did not wear earplugs when they should have worn earplugs. Wear your goddamn earplugs, kids. You will thank me for it.
All right. There you go. It does get loud. Yeah, if it hurts, it's too loud, y'all. That's it. That's a rule of thumb.
And if it stops hurting after it hurts, it's definitely too loud.
Yeah. That's a good
one. I'm going to turn
that's
my phone off here because it's blowing up here because, people like the show. Hey.
Oh my God, you're on Dan's show. We love that show.
I'm sure
that more and more people are saying that.
More and more. Matthew, do you have a sound or noise you actually hate or dislike? I would have said feedback. That's crazy. I love it.
I have many, 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 so many I can't even begin to, like the sound of chewing, the sound of, like, like water dripping, all those little things, I'm not going to get into discourse, but let's just say there's some neurodivergence happening up there. So, little things that one would not expect are amplified with me. So yeah, definitely a lot of sound. So that might explain why something atonal and dissonant and loud would be pleasurable. Mm-hmm. Although I do like some quiet shit too. And I'm not saying I've done folky type stuff, sad ass, slowcore shit, like it's all good, it's all love, children, it's all love,
it's all
okay.
Love.
Next question. Let's go.
All right, here we go. So the next question is about cheese. If you were born in France or Wisconsin, or if you spent a decent amount of time there, you get more than one answer. Otherwise, you get one answer.
Okay,
unless you break the rule. Do you have a favorite cheese?
Yeah, I do. I'll just go for a good old smoked extra old cheddar. I'm simple like that. That's good on a slice of apple or something like that. Melted. It's tasty. It's tasty shit. The smoke just kind of brings out the flavor of everything. It makes for a nice contrast with the sweet. Yeah.
First time someone's mentioned having the cheese with the apple here, but it's a move I became familiar with. I'm not sure I'm into it. Like they even have it with like apple pie. I'm like,
whoa, yeah, I was a little hesitant with cheese? That, but it has to be the right kind of cheese. You can't just throw any kind of a dairy food product on there and expect the same results.
Oh, okay. Well, if you don't know, now you know, buddy. Matthew, we're at the reincarnation question. If you can come back as some other plant or a non-human animal, and if you had the ability to choose, what
cat.
Would it be?
Cat.
Cat. If you went to heaven, what would you want to hear God say?
One, there's no heaven, and if there was, I no way they'd let me in. Fuck that. I got a picture, they got pictures on the wall of that place, like, you know, do not, like it's like the, you know, the bodega of that dude who's always fucking stealing candy. They have pictures of them in every place in that neighborhood. That's me in heaven. No, fuck that.
Yes. Matthew, if you can meet an influential leftist, whether they're dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, Ellen Willis, because we could talk about rock music.
You said Ellen Willis.
Ellen Willis. Oh, did I stump you on that one, Dan?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm often stumped. I'm a baby leftist, Matthew.
Oh, okay. Well, the gist is Ellen Willis was a rock critic in the 70s and 80s. She started out with Rolling Stone and ended up with The New Yorker. So she was a rock critic for The New Yorker. She was one of the few prominent women rock critics at the time. But she was also a very prominent feminist. And she's known in some New York circles. I know there was some shit that happened during 9/11. She kind of threw in her lot with a number of academics who supported the war effort against Afghanistan, and kind of, there was kind of this whole schism among the left at the time. If you check out the New York Observer, I believe it was Rick Perlstein, did an article at the time about the ongoing schism amongst the New York left with the regards to the Afghanistan question. That was when Chomsky was like a swear word. I know he's all cuddly and, you know, our hobbit, you know, great uncle, but at that time, you know, him coming out against against military action against Afghanistan immediately following 9/11 was cancel culture, kids. That was real cancel culture, not this bullshit they're talking about now because he can't say the N-word, anymore. I'm talking canceled, and saying that you agreed with Chomsky would get you canceled. And I was a nobody. I can say that I did not support the war in Afghanistan, but I can also say I'm a Canadian, and it was a different vibe there. I'm not sure if I could get away with that looking as I do in a city like New York, the way that New York was from September 11th onward, you know, till, you know, going past Anthrax. I'm trying to think how long New York was kind of on that razor's edge of anxiety that was driving the rest of the country. But yeah, that was an interesting time to be a leftist. And it was weird too, because that summer, we're getting on the 20th anniversary of this, there was the protest in Montreal against the, oh God, I'm going to forget the full name of it, something of the Americas. It was one of those World Trade Organization, IMF type meetings of countries that took place in Quebec. And that was one of the biggest left-wing actions of the era, I guess. And it was totally erased by the World Trade Center dropping. Almost nobody remembers it. Summit of the Americas, that's it. That was it.
Summit of the Americas.
Yep. An activist named Jaggi Singh was very infamously arrested because he had set up a teddy bear catapult. And that is a catapult that shot stuffed animals, because they erected this giant fence that is pretty much now ubiquitous in these kinds of meetings. But at the time, this was a new invention. You didn't wall off the people. They did this because of the Battle of Seattle, which some kids may or may not have heard of, that happened in 1999, which is when you had a World Trade Summit in Seattle, Washington, that turned into a good old time with about 20,000 people in black running wild and smashing Starbucks windows and shit like that. And there's nothing that freaks out the libs and the normies like a broken Starbucks window. That's when that makes them, oh my God, what's happening to our society?
This isn't America.
This isn't my America.
My America.
It's a window. It's, they're insured. They'll be fine. This is actually helping the economy. You know, some guy who contracts to Starbucks is now going to have, you know, make some money putting in some new windows. He's like, fuck yeah. He's like, yeah, fuck globalization. More broken windows. You know, I'm starting to wonder if like the window industry was behind all those actions. Cause I swear to God, it couldn't have all been cops. There had to be a few, like, you know, some guys like, smash, handing out his card, like, yeah, I do window repair, of course I can help you out with that shit.
I can
anyway. Okay, next question.
I definitely remember that mob episode of the kid thrown a brick through the window. And okay. Next up. Yeah. So, well, I don't know if you can have a hypothetical conversation with Ellen Willis, and it could go any way you like. How would it go?
What would they say? I'd be really fascinated to hear her recounting of the porn wars, sex wars, whatever you want to call them. They're kind of still ongoing, but in feminism in the 70s, you had kind of had the so-called radical feminists who were against sex work, and a certain sector of feminists who either were sex workers or did support sex work, and that includes transgenderism. Transgenderism, ooh, that word. But that was how it was, that was considered progressive back then. If you'd use that, it would be transsexualism back then. But all these schisms that we see now and these divides that everybody thinks was invented by Tumblr, nah, shit, that shit was invented by your parents or even your grandparents. Like, we're talking, like, all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again type shit, like full on Battlestar Galactica. Like, it's wild when you actually go back and read some of this old shit. Like, I believe Rolling Stone has some of Ellen Willis's writing on the Hyde Amendment and when it came about in, I think it was 1978 or 79, and also the defeat of the ERA. And the question being, where does feminism go from here? Because those were, abortion and the Equal Rights Amendments were, considered two of the biggest gains in the American women's liberation movement. Suddenly they saw the backlash coming. And that's where you saw a lot of the splitting that happened and a lot of the sectarianism that you see now and the power, the rise of power feminism and all these divides. None of this was invented by online. It came in pre-existing. If anything, it's because a lot of the first cohort of feminist bloggers were either, part of the zine scene in the 90s or had access to that kind of Riot Girl underground or were in college in that same time frame and took women's studies classes or gender studies classes in which this sort of discourse was kind of just what you did. And it didn't become like this kind of huge public consumption thing until, Obama era. That's when I really saw it kind of being absorbed and instrumentalized into the general public consciousness and also weaponized, very specifically weaponized. At the time, prior to this, like if you look at, I don't know if it's still in there, but the old DSA, whatever, their mandate, a big thing in there is identity politics. But that's identity politics from the Combahee collective and not the neoliberalized, what the fuck is this? Like, hire more women drone operators type intersectionality shit. Critical race theory, intersectionality, these are all terms that actually have a very specific meaning that have been hijacked by malicious actors with an agenda to wreck and split. I can't even think of it like, and it's fairly obvious, the dog whistles if you are attuned to it. And it's also fascinating, but at the same time, a lot of people who claim to support critical theory and claim to support intersectionality TM are in fact using it as a mechanism to push the same old politics, the same old policies, the same old economic agenda. It's just, it's the Borg. It's just something that's been absorbed into the machine that is America and that they're using to their own end. So at that point, you have to think, well, are we doing something because we're wedded to it as, a fetish, or are we doing what is materially effective? And, that's why I try and keep in mind with that. But on the flip side, you don't throw away core values. So I guess one thing the left really needs to ask itself is, what are our core values? Now, to me, evangelizing to Nazis, that's never been leftism. You ignore or you punch Nazis. Like, you fight back against them. You don't, like, you leave that evangelism is not leftism. We're not here to be like fucking missionaries for Marx. That's why he said that's why he stole religion as the opiate of the masses. Like, it's like fuck, man. The amount of energy I see being wasted on trying to convert people, I recognize that from my fundamentalist upbringing. And I can tell you, if you don't believe you're getting brownie points for heaven, it ain't going to do you any good when it comes to boots on the ground and getting shit done. So focusing on, you know, I would much rather see people see organize, you know, see coalitions being made with actually existing organizational structures on the left that are marginalized from the mainstream white left, very specifically Black, et cetera. Let's say BIPOC. God, again, these terms, there's a word I don't like. Fucking right, BIPOC. Fuck that shit. But everybody knows what you mean when you say it, except they don't. They think they know. They have it, they try and get them to come up with the same meaning. That's the fun part. But those are the communities that really, really, I would love to see more actual outreach happening, and not in a paternalistic fashion of, you know, M4A will save your life, but more what kind of knowledge and experience and resources can you bring to us? What, how can you help us? Because Black folk can help, but it has to help us too. And also recognizing there's no one Black folk, there are many communities. But again, if you're reaching out to various, you know, community groups and political organizers, you'll find that the most conservative Black Democrat is still further to the left of your alt-right, you know, weeb kitty on fucking Twitch, and is way more amenable and knowledgeable about radical politics and radical action and organizing, especially if you're fucking talking Chicago, as you will know there. You know, a lot of these people that are liberals now, at the time, were radicals, and there is still opportunity to work in coalition with them if you understand that they are, you know, that it is a marriage of convenience, and, you know, don't trust them, you know, this is adversarial, et cetera, et cetera. But you pick your comrades and your cohabitants on the movement very carefully, and this has come up, you know, periodically over the years. During the Second Iraq War, you had a lot of paleo libertarian and paleo conservative figures that in the past had kind of been ostracized because of their traditionalist beliefs on integration and abortion and Israel. TLDR, they're sexist, racist, anti-Semitic assholes, but because they were against the war in Iraq and imperialism and pushed back against the neoconservative slash liberal interventionist slash decent left consensus that bombing the world to peace was the only way to go, you dance with the ones who brung you. That was kind of, you know, to a bunch of kids who, you know, 14, 15 year olds who didn't really have much experience with the left, reading a William Lind or a Ron Paul sounded like the left. Hey, it's called antiwar.com. They're anti-war. The left is anti-war. Therefore, these guys are anti-war. And it's like, no, these are isolationists. They're not... These are not the droids you're looking for. Like, no, but you see a lot, that's where a lot of the influence that you see on this idea of, you know, of Glenn Greenwald, for example, being a leftist or something like that. Like, I'm not mad at Glenn Greenwald for betraying the left because he was never on the left. He never claimed to be on the left. He's always come from that paleo-libertarian tradition. And he makes much more sense, you know, his politics, and it makes a lot more sense if you put him in that ideological framework versus trying to force him into leftism and then contort leftism to include people who aren't left. He's not post-left. He was never left. He never crossed the border there. He just was against, he was anti-Bush. And people on the left happened to, some people on the left happened to share that politics and made coalition with him. And he had some really good interns back then. And they did good work. Shout out to Glenn Greenwald's interns and Andrew Sullivan's interns, some of whom y'all may be familiar with, but I think one of them is on CTH, Deep Beige or whatever the fuck his name is. I don't know. He was the one who exposed Andrew Sullivan's backroom insistence that Black people are inherently dumber than white people on the genetic scale. And so the reason why all those Andrew Sullivan posts were tolerable between 2008 and 2014 is because he wasn't writing any of that shit. It was all interns who were like 20 years old and fucking, hey, I can put whatever I want because he thinks I'm cute. Fuck it.
Wow, there's so much in there. All right. I have to insist we move along here.
Yes, this inquisition is good. I feel like I've taken over here. I'm bottoming from the top. That's not good. Or topping from the bottom. I don't know. Hello. Woke you up there, Dan. Hi.
That's the show, everyone. No, I love it. I love it. Did I ask yet, Matthew, your favorite leftist book or author?
Oh, God. I see it.
It's hard to ask someone who's well-read this question. They hate it.
Yeah, it's like I say, you know, ask me any day. I don't know. I don't even know if there's really, I would say there's any one book or one author, because I really hesitate about elevating somebody to that level of a personality cult or an expert. Like, I, you know, there's some good ideas out there, and some, I would say read, I believe it's called Governing in the News by, God, why can I always forget the guy's name, but I'll put it up on my Twitter because I can find that. And also, again, Manufacturing Consent by Chomsky and Herman, not because it's trendy, but because it's really it's kind of, if you want to talk about a basic introduction to some ideas of leftism, as well as, hey, there it is, all right, as well as you know, a way to identify how media and other elements of public consensus tend to force these ideas onto us, and how to critically examine those. It's a good tool. Again, like I said, these are books that you will find in J schools, or at least J schools that still exist. Whether they should exist is another question. I'm going to try and avoid too many more spicy takes as we're winding down here. Because, you know, I don't want to get further trouble. Hey, if any of those Twitch kitties who have ex-Nazi friends are mad at me, I just want you to know, suck my non-binary left one.
Matthew,
I'm just trying to get you the rub, because to me all this Twitch shit is just pro wrestling minus the chair shots and the blow off match. Like, for real, it's just all fucking. And in my mind, I like to think that all the people that are beefing with each other, it's all a worked shoot behind the scenes. They've got the book, and they know what's happening next, and they're just trying to get everybody as mad as possible at each other and drive up subscription and views and money. So if this means that this gets you some more views because one of the assholes that I talked about earlier decides to clip this and make me public enemy number one among a bunch of people, I don't care about them, but they're kids. They're just kids. In 5 years, they'll be something else. They're just learning right now. They're still on their training wheels. Like, who am I to knock them off? I'll nudge them a little bit and maybe mock them when they're stupid, because mock me when I'm being a, I'm sure people are mocking me right now because I'm some old bitch talking shit on the internet. And, you know, again, I don't know shit, and neither do you.
That is fair. I don't know a goddamn thing.
Goddamn. I'll drink to that.
Cheers. I'll drink to that. Matthew, I don't know if you watch streams. I don't think you're not like a streamer yourself. I know you're a guest from time to time. Do you have same any
news maybe talk a video? I will say Kenzo. I like the Kenzo Shibata show. That was fun. I thought that was because it was a, I won't say a professional, well, it was a professional format, because it was formatted rather than open, you know, forum. It wasn't just some dude in the gamer chair freestyling. I hate that shit. You know, give me a good format. I like a format. You know, that gives the viewing audience something to look forward to. Like, I don't want to look forward to 2 hours of some socially maladjusted groomer talking shit about some other socially maladjusted groomer that I don't even want to know. Like, no, just stop. Donate your gamer chair to Food Not Bombs. That's what I say. Donate all the gamer chairs to Food Not Bombs. They could use the money. And or the gamer chair, because apparently it's ergonomic and good for your back.
I don't get it. They don't look cool to me. They look dumb, and I don't think they look comfortable either.
They look so dumb. There's no way to look authoritative while sitting in a gamer chair wearing the giant ass ears. And they're also talking politics while playing a game.
Yeah.
And how are you compartmentalizing all this? Like, how can you even? No wonder it's all bullshit. Because their main focus is, oh shit, I got to beat the boss. Oh fuck, oh, do I have enough credits? Oh no. But at the same time, they're talking to 20,000 of their closest friends about, you know, Medicare for All and Kyle Rittenhouse and whatever the fuck, radical anarcho Bidenism, like. Words. They those are definitely words, and they have lots of them. But
technically.
Like I said, giving them lots of material to clip and steal from you. You know, if they get violent, please do a DMCA takedown. Otherwise, go nuts. Use me as much as you like to get the rub. We got to get more people on Leftist and Chill. Although I guess if you're coming in angry and hot from a Twitch stream, you're not exactly chill. But
That's my job. I got it.
Placate and you know, kind of, you know, moderate. You know, maybe you can get Chomsky to do a debate with, I don't know, Merrick. Oh, there I dropped the big one. There I dropped the nuclear bomb. I don't even know how to touch that because I don't even know what a Merrick is. What is, we are all Merrick. There we go. Ooh, there's a controversial thing I have
knowing.
Said. I canceled myself right there. You don't even bother to cancel me, kids. I canceled myself for that. We are not Merrick. There's another piece of advice. Don't be Merrick.
Don't be Merrick.
Friends, don't let friends be Merrick. I would rather you be Gun Girl than be Merrick.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. Hard to say. All right, Matthew, I want to give the chat a moment here to ask you some questions, and I'll pass those along to you.
That shit. There's actually people who are in real time and roasting me and/or engaging with the things that I'm saying and/or totally ignoring it and having their own conversations, which I encourage. Talk amongst yourselves. You know, we'll give you a topic: cigarettes. Should they be mentholated or not? Discuss.
literally, everyone's just saying how you're spitting fire and you're based as fuck. If I see any questions from chat, I'll pass them along to you. Oh, what's a J school? Journalism school.
Journalism school. Yeah. Okay. Here I am using vernacular again. Yes. Journalism school, a place you go to learn how to journalism. Because everybody knows you need to have you need to go up 100K into debt and to publish for minimum wage entry level at fucking GM, whatever they're calling Gawker these days. I don't know, Geo Media, Jackoff Media. I don't know, whatever Goldberg is doing with it. And pay your goddamn workers. That's all I got to say.
I'm sorry. Usually I allow a little time for questions from the guests. So if you have any questions for me, you can do that. You don't have to.
One question I'll ask is, how is Chicago doing right now?
In what way specifically?
Generally, because there's been a lot of upheaval with you guys, be it on the COVID front and with, 13-year-old kids being shot by cops. And, you know, I mean, I know that's just an everyday thing, but, you know, there's certain 13-year-old kids being shot by cops that get elevated above the others and just for whatever reason, and you know, usually because it's caught on tape.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Yoshi, I got my boom operator over here. Of course, she's such a good girl.
Boom operator.
Adam Toledo was shot and killed by the police. They tried to cover that up pretty much. And there was another shooting, I believe, that we just saw the footage today, where the moment that he was shot, though he had a gun in his hand, he was literally facing away from the cop. It's just like they can't stop fucking shooting people. Like days after Adam Toledo shit came out, like, how the fuck are you gonna keep shooting people? Like, why are they so bad at their fucking job?
I'm gonna stop you right there because you said something. Why are they so bad at their job? That they're not being bad at their job. They're being good at their job. They did their job. They're following policy. I recall a few years back there was an incident that came up in the news about a police officer who refused an order to shoot an unarmed suspect and was reprimanded by the department because he didn't follow departmental policy and put his fellow officers at risk. So when you say they're not doing their job, you have to remember, what is the job of agents of the state? It's not to serve and protect the people. A cop shooting a kid is a cop doing their job. And if they get away with it, I mean, what is to get away with? You know, there are little to no consequences that will come from these shootings because they are doing their job from them. And this is where you see a lot of the encroachment of, we're talking popular culture and how that shapes the way we view the world around us through these kind of myths in our culture. Copaganda is so prevalent throughout multiple genres, and it's to the point where that's how we shape our ideal of what a police officer should be. So when you say that's not a cop's job, that's based on years of not just you, but our society sharing these myths via Dick Tracy comics and fucking, you know, Law and Order and NCIS, you know, these shows that create a misnomer, but cops were able to shoot people in the legs to disarm them through reason and do these, you know, and who are angry when somebody disgraces the badge. And no, that's not how policing works, especially not policing after the drug war was ramped up, and policing where you have civil asset forfeiture is now a part of policing. You know, right when you say that a cop is now a shakedown artist, like they don't even have to convict you or even charge you with shit, but and can steal your shit. Now that is fascism. I like straight up, like when you're creating these little petty fiefdoms of sheriff's departments that can pull you over and take your goddamn car and everything in it just because they want to. Who are they serving and protecting? They're serving themselves and protecting their bottom line, because that money goes directly into their fucking pockets. It's the same thing as a fucking organized crime syndicate and operating in, you know, in their territory, the shakedown ops that they do. Same shit, except it's fucking cops.
Played in a band with a guy. He was my guitarist, and he was an old dude. He was like 58, man, and I was like, 26. And he used to say, you know, the cops are the biggest gang in any town. I'm like, no. Yep. And I'm like, wait, it is true.
Straight up. And like all gangs, they claim to be at war with other gangs, but they're also working behind the scenes with them for common interests. And he saw that most, I mean, probably when when I think of cops in an organized crime context, I think of Los Angeles, because that's the one where you had the Ramparts scandal. You can feel free to Google that one. But you also have in the LA Sheriff's Department, there's been multiple organized criminal gang activity within the LA Sheriff's Department going back 30, 40 years. The current sheriff, he has made it his mandate, I believe it was in 2018, that he said he was going to root out criminal gangs within the LA Sheriff's Department or LA County Sheriff's Department. And of course, these continue to operate. They have matching tattoos. They run drugs. They run guns. They run shakedown ops. They do everything that a criminal gang does, except they have a badge and a mandate from the state to kill people if they feel they are threatened. If they feel they are threatened. Not if they are presented with a threat. Not a threat that they have to go to internal affairs and justify the shooting. They just gotta say, nah, I thought he had a gun. I thought he was gonna shoot me. Oh, good for me. Wow, good job. Like, I think that's what bugs me most about copaganda is, like, you know, the Rat Squad, IA, they present IA as this all-powerful oversight body. I'm like, they're HR. They're a mop-up operation. They're there to protect the image of the department. Yeah. They're, you know, the cops union is there to, you know, that's, you know, kind of, you know, if you want to talk criminal gangs, I even hate calling cops unions because they're more, that's really a gang, you know, activity. You know, people saw that. People want to have a really fun Google Bruce Springsteen, 41 Shots, and the Fraternal Brotherhood in New York City, right around 2000. There was a very famous, or infamous police shooting back then. I'm not going to try and attempt to pronounce the poor gentleman's name who was murdered by police at the time, but that inspired Bruce Springsteen to write this song called 41 Shots and American Skin. And a whole bunch of cop unions in New York freaked the fuck out and declared Bruce Springsteen to be an enemy of police. And they were refused. They were saying they were going to refuse to provide security at Bruce Springsteen shows.
And fucking feelings, like, dude.
They were shitting on him hard. And like, you know, none of this, we love you, born in the USA shit. They're like, fuck you. Like, you know, and it's just so hilarious to see that, you know, them heightening the contradictions in real time. It's like, thank you for doing my job for me. Like, you know, I'm just going to sit. Yep. Go ahead. Keep talking. Like that. I wish everybody would just give an open mic to a police union. Like, forget the fucking spokesperson for the actual police department. Just give a hot mic to your fucking, you know, and a couple of fucking tall ones to the comms guy from your local fraternal brotherhood, and they will go the fuck off like somebody off of The Sopranos. And like, just keep writing it down. Right. Use that shit, because that's honestly the only time that a cop is being half honest, because cops always, always, always lie. That's another bit of advice, kids. They always lie. And that's not me saying that cops are bad people because they lie, although they are bad people. But they lie because they're allowed to do so. They are in some cases expected to do so. And if you're allowed to do something and it's effective to do something like that, why not do it? You're not going to face any consequences for it because it's okay. You're doing your job. It is a cop's job to lie.
And there it is. I'm going to insist we skip the last section, which is what's grinding your gears, only because...
You already know what's grinding my gears. It's been coming up there. It's all been coming up. There's more that could grind my gears, but we don't have enough time to get into that. We'll save that for the next show.
I would love that, Matthew. And the idea is usually the format's just like in this little tidy 1-hour-ish format. So I'm going to insist we move it on from there. And I got to say, that was so much fun. I really, really, truly enjoyed chatting with you.
Cheers.
I think we planted a lot of seeds, to be quite honest. And so many things I want to like.
I saw you Googling a lot, so I thought that was a good
idea. I was Googling a lot. I do this thing where I just write notes. It just helps me pay attention. Otherwise, I get distracted by things. So I'm like, holy shit, this is going to be a lot of really cool things to keep returning to. And of course, come back and plant some new seeds and we'll just rinse and repeat. Next time we meet, of course, if there is a next time, and I hope there will be, we ditch the format, dude. We just get to chat about the things that we want to chat. We get to freestyle at that point.
All right. Sounds good.
Jeez. I feel like I didn't hold you back, though.
Oh, no. I don't think
wonderful.
I felt liberated. I felt free to be me.
That's what it's about.
So, we can be free. Do what we want.
We can be free. So we're going to hopefully continue the conversation again. Matthew, we've invited you in the spirit of building leftist unity, strength, and power. You've been a wonderful, beautiful, absolutely fucking handsome guest as well. You're up there as a nomination for hottest guest, I think. I think that's fair to say.
I'll take that. Yep. Hey, everybody. Yep. Hey, ladies and ladies. I'm there. And on the internet,
beautiful,
the World Wide Web.
Matthew, thanks again. Peace and solidarity.
Solidarity, brother.
All right, next time.
Until next time.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry. Did you do that or me? I think it was me. Sorry about that. God, I love Matthew. Hey, listener. You just heard an episode of Leftist and Chill, the show you never knew you didn't need but still can't live without, the podcast version. Content like this is only made with the support of listeners like yourself. Please support at patreon.com/idansimpson today.